It's time for Driving Me Crazy, coming to you live from Beechtree Studios near beautiful Pinehurst, North Carolina. This is the only show where a husband and wife drive, talk cars and life, and still love one another each day. Here's John and Laurie. Or is it Laurie and John? Oh, take it away, you crazy kids.
Well, I know that Laurie and John are on the line, and I'm the one that's late. We had a problem this morning. Somehow the system didn't work, but we're going to try to see if we can. I think I've just logged in. However, I need to find the studio screen, which hasn't come up yet. So bear with me a moment as I try to find that, because that's always the hard part. And bear with me one more second. All right, so we have a very interesting show with John and Laurie. They actually did a review of a Volvo, a Polestar version, which is like top end and very, very fascinating. And I know that Laurie just loves the Volvo. In fact, my first car was a Volvo, and I just adored it. It was really so fantastic. And so I've got great memories, but that goes back many, many years. And so we're going to find out what their impression was of the car. And I know that Laurie's been suffering some problems with her knee. So hopefully she was able to drive it comfortably. And because I was thinking, everything I was thinking about was like, how did she drive the car? Did she have a good time? Or was she just able to look at it lovingly and adoringly? So that's what the problem was. Okay, I'm still having difficulty finding the showing up the studio screen. So there's some difficulties here. I hope you're hearing me because I'm trying to do two things at once, which is not so easy for someone of my age or inclination. You know, I'm not really great at all these gadgets. Oh gosh, this is like unbelievable. All right, let me just see if there's another way of doing it because this is not working. And maybe there's a problem here that I didn't realize. So bear with me another moment. Let me see if I can get this up and running. And let's see. Okay, so let me see exactly where we are. I'm not sure myself. Yeah, there's some sort of a problem, but I know this will get resolved very shortly. And looks like I'm on top of it, but I'm not quite sure. All right, let me see. There's got to be another way, a back door way of getting on. So we're going to try to see if that works. All right, now let's just see. Where is it here? I think there should be. Okay, this might be the way to do it. I think this will work. Okay, bear with me a moment as we pull it in. And we'll see. Okay. Yeah, I think this is going to work. All right, we'll see in a moment. Yep, there we are. So I'm going to bring in our two guests, the stars of the show. So let me see. Okay, I think they both are staying. Yes, I can just hear you now for the first time. My apologies. We had trouble getting on today.
Hey, I love the play-by-play on what you were doing.
Say that again.
That was brilliant, Hezek.
That was a great play-by-play.
We were riveted.
Oh, you're kidding.
Will he make it? Will he figure it out? Yes, yes.
Me too. Yeah. He's a great passer. Hezek does it.
And the first car I owned was a Volvo, and I'm worried about Lori's knee, and could she get in? This is great, Hezek. This is what live radio is all about.
I think you should start the show.
It really is, but I was beside myself. I was sweating bullets, as they say. So, first of all, good morning. What a pleasure.
Good morning.
I was so looking forward to this show. I hope I haven't truncated it by 5 or 6 minutes.
Oh my God.
So tell me, Laurie, were you okay driving the car? Were you able to do it?
One time I did. No, but I did start my therapy sessions yesterday, and apparently.
Bless you for that.
Yeah, well, thank goodness, but, you know, it's early days. But, you know, all because I was so, I'll tell you what, I was so wanting to exercise and beat this, you know.
And be outside.
Yeah, be outside.
Yeah.
Beat this coronavirus mindset that has blanketed everybody across the world's, you know, frame of mind. And so when I hit the water, what, 6 weeks ago, I did it with great gusto and then too much gusto.
Overdid.
Blowing out my knee. So it's, so I paid the price. But it's listen, hey, you know, it'll be fine. What isn't fine.
Hey, you're young. You have time to live and learn. That's the beauty of
God bless you. God bless you for that. But what I did want to ask you is, Johnny and I were pulling up some news online, and is it true that Bloomingdale's and Lord & Taylor, Tiffany's, have closed their doors, or is this old news? Are they opened again? Are they going under? What's the deal with all these famous New York department stores?
Yeah, Lord & Taylor's has closed. Bloomingdale's I didn't hear about. Macy's is very much concerned, and Gimbel's as well. We're seeing a lot of stores fold. What was the name of? There was a men's store downtown.
Brooks Brothers closed. Brooks Brothers.
Brooks Brothers. Yeah, and
Abercrombie
a few others
and
too. Yeah, absolutely. The problem is that it's not so much the COVID crisis, but the COVID crisis informed a lot of people that they can shop online. And everything is delivered that way. So you don't even you need to know your size. You need to know exactly what you're ordering, and then you can order that way. I remember I used to have an aunt who was always very picky, and she would touch everything. She said, "Oh, that looks good." She would feel it just to get a sense of what she thought it was worth, you know. But it was a real nut job. This was, but a funny character, but. Now you can't even do that, and you can't feel anything. You don't sense the texture or anything like that. So you really need to know what you're doing and what you're seeing. But a lot of stores are shutting down.
Well,
and
Amazon
Apple shut down stores in Florida because they're concerned about people getting infected. So everything's going down.
Well, Amazon, you know. If we'd have been smart enough to invest in Amazon a few years ago. But, you know, one of the things about Amazon that makes them so popular is you can order off of Amazon, and if you don't like it, they'll pay to have you ship it back and get something, you know, different or whatever. I mean, this thing about online shopping, and yes, it's convenient, and I agree with you. It's just we've lost the ability to interact as human beings when you start doing that. You don't...
Well, I think I think there's something very personal, and that's one of the things that we thrive on and we need. And that's why when there's an opportunity to get together, even with without socially distancing, people do.
Right.
There's a need
to
shake hands, touch hands, hug, you know, say hi.
Oh, that's very difficult.
It's getting to the point where it's visually seeing people without masks. I mean, I go.
That's true.
You know that I shoot sporting clays and love the outdoors and have all my life. Well, when we go there, you're supposed to wear a mask when you're in the clubhouse and signing in, but you don't wear a mask when you're riding around on the cart or you're outdoors for Pete's sake. You're within.
Right.
You're 6 feet from anybody. You know, you've got hand sanitizer. You've got all that stuff that you need. And it's sunshine is the right thing. And, you know, there are a lot of people out there enjoying the outdoors and you can actually see one another. If you know what I'm saying here, you go into the bank, which I did yesterday, and everybody's got a mask on. And I made the statement, you know, 6 months ago, if you'd have done this, there'd have been. And it's going to get to the point where, from a bank standpoint, something's going to happen. And when it does happen, from that point on, you're going to have to take off the mask so that they can have a visual something of people coming into the bank. And then you're going to put the mask back on because there has to be face recognition based on actually seeing your face or that's outside. But there's got to be some way to track all these things. It's, oh, busy. The world's in a mess right now.
One thing that I found very interesting in the news this morning was a report from England saying that fishing has gone through the roof. People are fishing more now than for decades because they can get out. They're doing something physical. They're on the stream. They're casting for fish.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that this is brilliant. I'm going to seriously think about reintroducing some of the fishing books that I myself wrote 20 years ago because it's time, again, to see how beneficial things like that can be.
Well, and fly fishing has always been sort of a solitary thing.
People are also going bird watching. It's
again,
very
outdoor
unusual,
activity.
Everything outdoor. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
You know, when I was growing up in Brooklyn, it was a big thing to go into the city to go shopping. And neither my aunt or my mother drove except very locally. So we would either take the subway, which back then they were immaculate. And I remember they had the gum dispensers, and you'd put a penny in, and you'd get two pieces of dentine gum.
Yep.
And it didn't.
Really?
And I wish. And I wish that they still had whatever it was, that formula, because dentine tasted different from the little dispensers in the subway than it does when you buy it at the drugstore, the grocery store.
Oh.
But I remember that when my grandmother would accompany us, she would, and everybody dressed up. We all dressed up. We went to Bonwit Teller.
Yes.
And my grandmother would wear white gloves. I mean, it was a big thing. Mm. I mean, look at the old Judy Garland, Fred Astaire movie, Easter Parade. Everybody on Easter Sunday wore the hats and their best outfits and paraded up and down Fifth Avenue. I mean, this is how I remember growing up. Going for tea at the Palm Court at the Plaza, you always dressed up. Going to the theater at night, you always wore a long dress and gloves. Now, the theater, of course, Broadway shuttered, but even before that, I mean, it was nothing to just go to the theater in jeans. I mean, so much has changed in the mindset, not just of how society behaves, but how we ourselves see ourselves.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And I think that this coronavirus has just depleted any kind of
I think the virus has led to the financial problems that have created all these things you're talking about.
And we're at the tip of the iceberg.
I am concerned. I'm literally, you know, when you see these kinds of stores closing, I think there's genuine, you know, the old saying that.
Well, there's definitely, everything is changing. So the way we look at cars, the way we look at clothing.
Oh, that was good.
Everywhere, everything and everything that we're familiar with is changing. Even our work habits are now changing. A lot of people are going to be working at home. We just had a major disaster up in the Northeast. Con Ed, the electrical purveyor, they failed, and there was no internet, and there was no cell service, and it was insanity, and it was going on for days.
Whoa.
And you know, they say they're going to fix things, but they never do.
Mm.
And so much of that system, you wonder if it's antiquated or not. But you know, Johnny and I have been batting around the notion of, you know, getting a house in the mountains, and the thought that we would be remote now doesn't even matter, because remote means two things. One, can you get to your doctor's appointments easily enough? But more importantly,
That's right.
You know, do I have access to the stores? Well, it doesn't matter anymore. You can order online and it'll be there the next day. You don't have to go to the store anymore. And that's the point that Johnny was making. You don't have to organize your day the way you used to, because now everything can be delivered, including food and groceries. And why go to the stores when you can't? When first of all they're shuttered. Second of all, you can't touch anything. Third of all, the whole notion of being 6 feet, having to make sure you're 6 feet apart from anybody who's coming down the aisle from you.
No, I hate that. And
John, I'm going to tell this story about you, Johnny. Johnny had an appointment with a doctor, a therapist this week. And he went, and he was back home in like 10 minutes. I said, what happened? He said, well, first they said that you had to have a mask on in order to get through the front door. And he had forgotten his mask, and so they offered him a mask. And then he asked them if he had to have his therapy session, which is an hour long, with a mask on, and they said, yes, well, Johnny has breathing trouble, and he can't tolerate that. And so he left.
Mm.
So how many people like Johnny, and also like me, who suffer from not being able to breathe properly when we've got something over our face, this whole thing is, it's like the world is reinventing itself by necessity because of how we have been, how we have
not necessarily for the better either.
No, and how we've been arrested into this situation where, and I may be very wrong about that, but it is less than 1% of people that are infected that are in difficulty and potentially.
Well, that's really the big issue. You know, I think when we went into a lockdown here in the United States, a lot of people were sequestered, and then Sweden was supposed to be the bad country because they didn't do that, and they have this what do you call it, herd immunity, and it seems that they may have been right after all these years, after all these months. So it's hard to tell what's appropriate. It's that's the point. It's that a lot of people who are vulnerable may die because somebody didn't wear a mask, and they may not die, even if they do, or they may die even if they do wear a mask. So it's very hard to tell, and our scientists don't really fully know everything, and we're learning something new every day. So
the story changes about every few days. Yeah, I agree. All right, let's talk about
because
the Volvo. We don't get them very often, and I want to talk about it for a minute.
Once upon a time, a long time ago, I was invited to Alaska. This story you've heard probably 12 times, but I'm going to tell it briefly and again. I was invited to Alaska to test drive the XC70, the Volvo Cross Country 70 wagon. It was innovative for Volvo at the time because they were not known for a car designed or developed of that nature, which was an all-wheel drive vehicle that could withstand a great deal more than the sedans that they were best known for many, many years. So I went to Alaska after two failed attempted tries due to the weather and not being able to get into Anchorage. And when I finally got there, it was torrential rain. And the plan for the 29 other journalists that had been invited was to go salmon fishing. Now, as an outdoor writer, this was like a dream come true. However, the 29 other journalists who were not into outdoor activities did not agree with me, and they preferred to go off on a scenic boat tour that had an open bar starting at 9 in the morning all day, and off they went. And I was fortunate enough to be adopted by a vice president of Volvo who was an avid fly fisherman, and off we went up the Little Susitna, which is a narrow, filthy river, not the water, but the banks, piled high with the carcasses of dead salmon. And so I thought, my God, this is terrible. These sportsmen, they come and they litter the river like this. Well, we went off, and 11 hours later, and me on the verge of hypothermia, I had landed 50 huge salmon, and I'm talking about no fish was less than 28. I had one fish that was 52 inches long. And the next day, my newspaper was waiting at my hotel door, and the front page said, a Japanese wildlife photographer maimed and killed on the Little Susitna. Now, this man apparently had only been less than a quarter of a mile from where we were standing, but the rain was sheets. You couldn't have heard any cry for help had that been happening while we were there. We were on a boat, so you know, obviously we didn't know, we didn't hear. But that was when I learned that this littered banks of this famous river were littered with the carcasses of salmon that bear had come in and captured. And
honey,
eaten.
The salmon swim right. up there and die after they mate.
And the bear eat them. And so, but in any event, that started my relationship with Volvo. I got back home, and the following day I got a call saying, would you like a Volvo? And I said, sure. And the day after, a Volvo Cross Country 70 was delivered to me, which I had for 2 years, and for even longer than that, I would write reviews of the Volvos that were coming out all over the world. Mm-hmm. I would travel, and there would be a Volvo waiting for me, and I'm talking about as far as the Pacific and remote islands where they would put a Volvo on a barge and bring it out to me to test drive on on an island that had never seen a Volvo in its existence. So my affection for Volvo is 30 years standing, and nobody makes a more formidable car. Their safety has always been the number one priority with Volvo, and that holds true with this car. Now, I did drive it once. I didn't feel like I was at one with the Volvos that I knew and loved in the former days, because this was a hybrid car. Okay, Johnny, take it away.
Well, I liked it. I'm not a hybrid fan, and this one didn't change my mind about hybrids, at least at this point in time. You plug it in. When we get it, the battery that's used for running the vehicle was basically there was no power in it. So I plugged it in, let it charge overnight. I don't know how long it takes to charge, but it was charged the next morning. And unplugged it, got in. The thing ran off the electric, incredibly quiet, lots of pickup. That was one thing I really enjoyed about it. Talk about that in a second. But the electric is the same as in the other vehicles. It's a hybrid, but mostly when you have electric power, it runs on electric power. So the battery is constantly being drained. So you drive it around during the day, and unless you step down on it, which would then kick the gasoline engine in, it just runs the battery down. So I think, personally, that this vehicle, and it's lovely, there's a lot of good things I'm going to say about it, but I think this is designed for somebody who has relatively short commutes or that kind of thing, so that you go through a routine of knowing every evening when you pull in the garage, you're going to plug the vehicle in so that you run off the electricity most of the time. If you don't, simply the battery that is the power part of the vehicle simply runs out, and you'll hit the brakes and it'll put a little back into the battery and so on, so that you can start it, and it always seems to start in the battery mode, very quiet and that kind of thing. But then once it gets low enough, you have 20 or 30 seconds of battery, and then it just shifts over to the gasoline engine. Well, when you have a balance of the electric and the gasoline, the mileage goes way up. You can imagine that. When you don't, then the mileage, they have a four-cylinder in it, which I thought was very interesting. And actually, and I've never really driven a Tesla, but I think this is sort of this Tesla philosophy. Tesla's all electric. But this one, when you get in and it's electric and whatever, and you pull out and you step down on it, somewhere in there it goes from electric to the gasoline engine. It's very seamless. It had an 8-speed transmission, very smooth. And the response, you remember how we talk about turbos and how when you step down on it, the four chipmunks have to decide what they really want to do? That's not true of the hybrid cars, at least not of the Volvo. When we're in electric mode, when I was in electric mode, and I stepped down on it, there was an instant response. The car literally jumped forward. It was absolutely stunning, the response you got from the electric then moving to the gasoline engine in a four-cylinder. So there was lots of power, which I put in the thing. It was like 450 horsepower that you got from the combination of the electric and the gasoline engine, which I thought was really, really good. Really good. It's a beautiful car. I said in the article, I don't normally start an article with three pictures of a vehicle, but I did in this one because, A, I wanted to show it being where the plug-in was, and it's just a pretty vehicle. But it reminds me, and it's called an SUV, but it doesn't remind me of an SUV. It reminds me of a station wagon. You remember the old station wagons? It looks more it looks more like that than I think it does an SUV, what I would call an SUV, which is more of the, the ones that became SUVs. Anyway, Lori was talking about the old XC70, and I remember when Des Young, our friend who had the television show, got one of these, and it was an XC something, but it was more of a station wagon-looking type of beautiful, wonderful vehicle. That's what this is. It's very striking in its looks, and it has a lot of really, I think, powerful design to it. Very aerodynamic-looking, very responsive, very comfortable. All of the things that you'd want. The one thing it didn't have, it had heated seats, heated steering, all those kinds of things. But the one thing it didn't have was air-conditioned seating. A lot of them have the perforations mm-hmm. now where you can have air conditioning and stuff. Volvo right. didn't have that, which I thought that was interesting. Some of the things it did have, it had one of those beautiful sunroofs that fold, just keeps going until it folds all the way back, and so uh-huh. the whole top of the car is open to the outside. I thought that was lovely, a nice addition to the thing. The, of course, the adjustable seats, like 10-way adjustable seats, all of the things you'd want for comfort in driving. Handling was great. Responsiveness was great. All of those kinds of things.
What about the new layout? Because isn't the Polestar is a new design, isn't it?
Well, the Polestar.
Very innovative.
Well, the Polestar is more about. Polestar is under the group that develops the electric performance and the performance
uh-huh,
hardware
okay.
upgrades and engine software optimization. That's their words, not mine. So
mm-hmm.
I think they're more responsible for the fact of this seamless move from electric to gasoline, the responsiveness of the vehicle. Like we were talking, when you give it, when you press down on the gas pedal, and it
right.
seamless, very strong, no hesitation moves. And also to get the car going. Also, it had to do with the smoothness of the ride, how they are dealing with that aspect of it. That was their contribution. As far as the design goes, I thought it was very simple. There were certain things I really liked. It had this big screen, like 12-inch screen, I think it was, and I really liked that kind of thing. The thing that was interesting about the screen is there were like four different things on the screen, and in order to engage it, you had to touch it so that then the screen just went to navigation, for example, or it just went to radio, for example, which, you know, a lot of them you have combinations of things. So it was
right.
interesting. Another little feature was the start and stop switch was actually right at your right hand, right behind mm-hmm. the gear shift. And it's a knob. You actually turn it to the right, and it starts the car. And when you want to stop, you put it in park and turn the knob to the right, and it turns the car off. I thought that was interesting. Hadn't seen that one in
mm-hmm.
a while. The transmission, you just pushed it forward twice to go in reverse. You pulled it back twice to go into drive. And the reason you did it twice is it always goes through neutral to get to those places.
Mm-hmm.
At least from part. So there were just little things like that. But what was I going to tell you? Oh, storage. First thing I did was drop the seats to see what kind of storage. Plenty of storage in the back because it's only for four people, okay? Maybe five
mm-hmm.
if you put a third one in the back. But plenty of storage space in the back. If you drop those two seats, which are very easy to do, push a button, bang, the seats fall down. Plenty of just incredible amounts of room in the thing. Great hands-free tailgate, easy, and of course it's all electronic. You just push a button, it opens, or push a button and it closes too. I'm trying to hurry because we talked, so it's already 10:30. Seeing I've sort of trying to hit all the important things. I'll close with this.
Time to go, honey.
All right, let me close with this. The Volvo XC60 beat out the BMW X3 and the Porsche Macan as the luxury midsize SUV in 2020. I thought that was really important. I mean, that says a lot right
important.
There. You beat the BMW. You've done something. Anyway, wonderful car. $73,000. That was the drawback.
Well, I would argue that because Volvos never die.
Okay.
And on that,
that's
happy
true
note,
as well.
All right.
Thanks,
Ezzy, have
guys.
A good week. Have a healthy week. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, Ezzy.
You
bye-bye.
Too. All the best. Be well.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, well, let's move in to none other than Gabrielle M. Edsel. She's the Unvarnished Blog editor-in-chief and publisher. How are you, Gabrielle?
I am wonderful, Ezzy. Always great to be with you. How are you, sir?
Okay, I'm so excited that you made the extra time of all days, you know, today
to talk about none other than Kamala Harris, who's been designated to be the vice presidential candidate running with Joe Biden. Are you clear on who she is? Can you define who she is? Because I find it very difficult to know where she stands somehow.
Oh, come on.
I think
Kamala Harris, she's a little bit of an enigma, isn't she?
She's an interesting
candidate. She's an interesting person for the Biden campaign to have chosen. And everybody had been saying that she was going to be the VP for quite some time, but it's an interesting choice. Looking at it from a non Democratic perspective, I don't exactly know what benefits she brings. To a certain degree, she fits the identity politics card of the female of color, which is what Joe Biden had promised. But at the same time,
is she a woman of color?
Well,
I know her mother is Indian, her father's Jamaican, and she is not the person that we think of as the downtrodden African-American in America or people of color that haven't had an opportunity in life. She's literally been born practically with a silver spoon in her mouth. I think her mother was a doctor. Her father was an economist. They lived very well. She went to the best schools. She went to Howard, which is a black university, very well respected. And she also went to California State. And she is of color because her heritage is of color. But is she what people in America thought of as a person of color?
Absolutely not.
I don't know. How did she become a person of color?
Well, this is the problem with identity politics. If you look a certain way, you can pretend to be whatever you want to be. The fact of the matter is you can't deny history. You can't deny the elements that make a person who they are, but aside from what they look like. So that's my, and it's also a very sad thing in the United States that we associate the term people of color with the a stereotype that they have to represent some sort of downtrodden personality. And that's what Kamala Harris is playing up. She's using it to her advantage, despite the fact that she hasn't necessarily gone through those same type of struggles.
Isn't she the one also that when she was the district attorney in California, wasn't she the one that put black people behind bars?
She was very heavy on drug crime, for especially nonviolent offenses, keeping people in prison, keeping innocent people in prison. And she wasn't district attorney. She was a state attorney general first before she became senator. No, but she has a very strong record on, especially with drug crime, which does impact people of color more if we just look at the numbers. And then there are also clips of her coming out making jokes about smoking marijuana herself. If you're going to be, it's just the absolute hypocrisy is astounding. So I don't think that this was, to a certain degree, was a wise move for the Biden administration for optics, for to be able to say, well, we fulfilled our promise of nominating a woman of color, sure. But
Is she unique in the sense that she could? She's more than a partner, because I think with Joe Biden in his high 70s, it's unlikely he's going to be able to survive beyond one term because of his age, and there are questions about his mental capacity. She's 55 years of age. She has a sense of, of the way she expresses herself, and maybe that'll, she'll end up being really the power behind the power, which is not a problem, except that when people vote for Biden, are they really voting for her? And is that what we're looking for?
That is the real problem, that the majority, and I forget exactly where the poll is from, but the majority of Democrats recognize the fact that they're, when they cast a vote for Biden, they're really casting a vote for the VP candidate. And,
right.
But what's interesting is looking back at some of the poll numbers, Kamala Harris dropped out of the primary on December 3rd. So it was 3 months before Super Tuesday, 3 months during the larger debate, the more noticeable debates. But it's perfect in some respects, the timing. First of all, we're a much different country right now than we were in December of 2019. Mm-hmm. We're in a very different place, both economically and socially. But at the same time, this has given us enough time to forget exactly about how bad of a candidate Kamala Harris was on the debate stage. The only time that she actually made real success was when she attacked Joe Biden. When she attacked Joe Biden on his race record, when she attacked him on his criminal prosecutor record, his crime bill record. So those were her only highs. It's in some respects it's just a political game that you have to play.
But she only made an impact on the electorate through the polls, at least between 2-4%. And I was shocked to read yesterday that her campaign effort is bereft to the tune of $1.1 million. So she owes that. How is she going to overcome all of these issues? And is that what we want? And we don't know where she is. Has she defined herself? I don't know where she stands on any issues.
She, and in some respects, that's a good thing for the Biden campaign. If you focus on Biden instead of focusing on Kamala Harris, but she's very progressive. She's very socialistic. She's in favor of Bernie Sanders' Medicare for All plan, instead of immediately phasing it out a little bit more. When you were in the campaign, and she rivaled Bernie Sanders in the amount of money that it was going to, that her plans were going to cost, not just for health care, but in total. She was the second highest, only beat by Bernie Sanders. So she's very much on that bandwagon. Joe Biden has been playing himself to a certain degree as a moderate. So in many respects, adding the more progressive wing of Kamala Harris will satisfy some people, but it also will be a drawback, especially in these racial contentious times.
Yeah, I think that that's the case. It makes it for a very nebulous ticket. But then we usually don't know very much about the vice presidential candidate, but I think I get the impression that Biden's leaning too much against her. And we don't know anything about her, and she's never worked a day in her life other than to work for government, but she's never defined herself. And I really wonder what that tells us about this whole campaign.
It's very fishy. It makes it such that it's difficult to make a decision unless you're able to take the time and do the heavy lifting and the research. But that's where
what heavy lifting can you do? I hear people say that all the time, but where are you going to be able to validate one thing or the other? You can Google it to death, but you don't know even what you're reading is legit. So we don't know what is and what isn't. I think that's what makes life so confusing nowadays. It's very hard to know what's happening.
There has to be some hope, Hezzy. Don't get so cynical on a Thursday.
No, I'm not.
We got
to
be.
No, I'm not cynical at all. I don't know. I don't know what the purpose of her is. And you know, if it means voting for Biden for the sake of voting for her as president,
Is she the one that's going to be managing everything? Which is fine if that's what she wanted. Then why didn't she stay in the race? And if so few people thought highly of her in the race that she couldn't even continue beyond the 4% that were thinking about her, what does that tell me? So she's not a candidate of value because she never made the goods. And even if you don't like Bernie Sanders, at least he had high numbers.
Well, at least he did have
people
high numbers. People knew where he stood, and he was popular. But the fact is that the Biden camp needs an enigmatic candidate. They need a candidate that they can shield to a certain degree, so that
uh-huh.
they can get passed through a more progressive agenda. That's part of the nature of the beast. But and both sides can play that way. It's not just one or the other. But the worst part of it is the fact that there's one of the things that I found that was really interesting when they were starting to make this announcement, and then they made their announcement together in Delaware. Harris came out really in a attack of Trump and the economy, that he inherited
uh-huh.
this wonderful economic state, and look what he's done with it, completely ignoring the fact that there, and to a certain degree, most people would say that there was no other choice but to shut down immediately. The question is
mm-hmm.
how to get back from it. So it just completely sidestepping it. The part of the reason that Kamala Harris makes an interesting candidate and makes it a good choice for the Biden camp is that she's able to deflect. She's able to change the narrative unsuccessfully if you look back on it later in retrospect, like we're doing right now. But in the heat of the moment, she does have the ability to galvanize people to a certain degree. She's not a Hillary Clinton in that way that is just kind of grating on and has the shrill type of attitude and demeanor. She's a little bit more level-headed, and she's a little bit more of a charismatic speaker.
Well, I don't know about you, but to me, even though everybody thinks very highly of the vice presidential candidate, you know, for Biden running, I don't know exactly what he brings to the equation. He seems to be old and feeble. He doesn't mm-hmm. sound to me that he'll be in control. She's a crime hawk, and until she wasn't, she's changing her ideas with health care plans. There's an uncertainty about her, and there's an uncertainty about Trump. About Biden. So I don't even know where this is going to go. We have like, what, 90 days, less than 100 days before the election.
Right.
Is everyone going to be at each other's throats and to define who they are now? Are we going to paint a new picture? And what's what? And what is America looking for? What's their solution?
I think what's going to make the difference in this election is whether or not we're going to be able to actually hold debates, whether or not both sides will consent to it, whether or not we'll
uh-huh.
be able to listen as the American people. Trump, like him or not, Trump is an entertainer. He is able to hold him, and he holds his own. He holds himself very well under
mm-hmm.
pressure. If he's able to demonstrate that, whether it's against Joe Biden or whether even it's against Kamala Harris, that probably won't
mm-hmm.
happen. But he'll be able to perform well. And so will Mike Pence if he has to go up against Kamala Harris. There usually is at least one VP debate themselves, but.
Mm-hmm.
That's the question of whether or not we're going to be able to, if the candidates themselves are going to be able to take that opportunity on a debate stage to shift the narrative in their own directions. That's the key.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know. It's not like I don't have any resentment to her or for any reason. It's just that I think she's an unknown,
And I don't know why we would want to even consider why the Democrats would want to pick an unknown, other than the fact that they could repaint her or redefine her, which is what she's been. She's like a clean slate. Nobody knows where she is at any given moment, and she changes
Kamala
her mind.
Kamala the chameleon.
It suits her.
Kamala the chameleon.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. I think we should make that a hashtag. But
it's very good. Brilliant of you.
It's interesting. It's all politicians, to be honest, but the way, especially people who are tempted by that power, who are hungry for power, will be able to just change who they want to perceive themselves, who they want the public to perceive themselves, who they want to show themselves to be. And that's the source of winning. In some respects, that's what Barack Obama was able to do in the 2008 election. He was able to make mm-hmm. himself, in some respects, come out of nowhere and rise to political stardom. And so that's part of what's happening now too with Kamala Harris. But at the same time, she does have a bit of a record.
Are they an adjunct to the former President Obama? Because I don't see that. I find them both to be an enigma in a situation. They're hard to believe. We don't know what their core beliefs are. They're like an enigma. Everything is up in the air with both of them, and so I don't know who we're voting for. But at the end of the day, maybe it's all about identity politics, and it's going to fly. If it flies, it flies. Everybody will vote their own way. I'm not being cynical about it. I just really wonder, is America ready for another, shot in the dark, and to do what? What's the plan? Do we have a plan? Do we have a vision?
There is no plan. That's the sad thing. It's a matter of what's pragmatic in the moment, and it's been about what's been pragmatic in the moment for as long as I can remember. As long as I can look back into mm-hmm. history, it's about pragmatism. It's about making the right call for the moment. And there's no. In some respects, it's unfortunately, it's futile to try and find the values, find the grand strategy. Maybe I'm mm-hmm. the one that's being cynical today. I'm sorry, but
no, you're not.
It's difficult. There's I don't even know exactly how to describe it, but ultimately, it's going and it's not just a matter of what the politicians recognize as pragmatic. It's also what the people recognize as pragmatic. So we can't just blame the politicians, mm-hmm. no matter how easy it is. We're the ones who continually elect bad people. It's partly our fault. But in some respects, we have to.
I just feel that the Democrats, when they tried to shove Hillary Clinton down our throat, she was not liked. She was, in fact, despised by many people. And she lost to the party who should have been able to replicate a win, especially after Barack Obama and the fact that her husband was a president at one time. So where did that go? And now we're getting another permutation of someone who should be inheriting something, and I really wonder what it is that they're inheriting. And I just find it an aberration to try to paint Kamala Harris as the answer to the African-American who's been downtrodden, haven't had an opportunity in life whatsoever. And here's this individual that had every opportunity in life, and now she's going to be running based on what? And nobody knows where she stands.
Nobody knows where she stands exactly. In a recent poll as of August the 6th, 21%, so she has a current favorability of 43%, unfavorable 36%. 21% of the American populace has no idea who she is or holds no opinion
exactly.
of her. That's how – and that's part of what makes this pick very interesting. that's part of what makes this pick essential. If a significant portion of the voting public doesn't know who the VP candidate is, even though you're voting for Joe Biden, it just based upon that name recognition, that's a huge factor.
When Trump was running, we didn't know who Pence was. Either.
Well, that's true. I think that there's a difference,
but
though,
I think
between voting.
Biden's old. I think because Biden's old,
yes,
we're looking at her as a potential next president. I don't even know if, even when he gets into office, assuming he gets into office, if he'll be doing heavy lifting or he'll go to her to do the work.
Nobody knows
who she is.
And that's part of the problem. That's the significant portion of the problem. But it's an unfortunate state of affairs. But ultimately, I think it depends upon two things. The first thing, being able to take control in the debates. That's very key.
Okay.
If there are debates, and then also the state of the economy. It's the for the swing voter. There are going to be ideologues on both sides who are just going to vote,
mm-hmm.
but the swing voter depends upon economic conditions. The swing voter depends upon national security to a certain degree also, but it's a matter of what falls in the pocketbook. The unemployment numbers for this week are consistently going down, and they have been going down for the past couple weeks. New unemployment claims as of last week were under a million at 963,000.
Right.
That's significantly down. The number of actually insured unemployed Americans is hovering at around 15.5 million, which is again down by over 600,000. So we are starting to make progress. Now, if we enter this second wave and there enters a second wave of lockdowns, that's going to be a different story. But if we can keep the economic situation under control until November, and this doesn't even get into the issue of exactly how are we going to run a national election? Are we going to be able to do some sort of mail-in voting system that stays honest? Are we going to be able to do some distancing with at physical polling locations? That's a whole nightmare in and of itself. But if we can keep the economic situation under control until November.
Why is that a problem? Are we going to not? I just don't understand. A lot of people are going to go and vote. But then I guess some people could also, is there a problem with ballots being sent in? The only problem with ballots, when you vote by mail or something like that, is it takes so long to count them. So it may be way into next year before we even find out who won.
And that is where there are certain problems for that losing ballots or having accidentally too many ballots. There can be problems that way, and there have been studies that have experimented with this and that have had some issues, especially in poor neighborhoods, inner city or rural neighborhoods, rural communities. There are some difficulties there.
In Westchester County, for example, we're spending $6 million on equipment for election machines. We're in the hole into the millions. That's how desperate we are in Westchester County, but they're going to spend $6,000 per unit of these machines. And if there's an issue about the machine and they try to find out what happened and who's who, they can't validate anything. Everything gets wiped out. So what kind of a con game is that? But here it is. It's all government-sponsored, and nobody even knows. I mean, I spoke about it, but it's pathetic. So what kind of con game are we playing?
Yeah, I think that's the cynical question of all.
I'm just tired of it. Yeah,
it's fed up Thursday. But... But it's we're in a very difficult position, and I think that part of our problem is we just need to be able to get through to the next step. Honestly, and then so in some respects, this might be a Pollyanna, might be trying to be too positive, but I
okay.
think that if we get past this,
I love
this election. If we get past this election, I think there will be a little bit of calming down, slightly. I don't think it's going to last long, but I think at a certain point we're at too much stress. So we're either going to reach our breaking point, or we're going to and just completely devolve. Or some people are going to be able to let go. But I think it all ultimately does depend upon, can we get this economy restarted? And will they let us get it restarted?
Well, it seems that the Dems and the Republicans they're not in agreement. And it seems that the population is not even in their radar. So the nation is suffering, and yet they can't come to an agreement on how much they should be able to pay people so that they can get over this hump. And, evictions are going to be starting in another month or so. What are we going to do with all of these things?
You ask so many good questions, Hezzy, and that's part of the problem that we're not connected to our political officials, and that's been a problem for decades. In some respects, it's very much like not having gone to the doctor for 30 years, and you decide to go now, and all of a sudden, you have this type of cancer, you have this type of issue, or your chronic diabetes is out of control. We're seeing so many different problems, not even just one, so many different problems
right.
that we just haven't dealt with. We've been having these problems. We've been disconnected from our political officials. We've been electing bad
right.
political officials. We haven't cared about the local levels of anything. We've been in so much debt. We have up to our eyeballs in being unable to fund these essential services. We're dealing with too many problems at once.
Well, I'm starting to wonder if we have a government, or if we have a government that's run by corporate America, and corporate America is interested in the dollar. They're not necessarily interested in the population. So I'm wondering who's standing there to defend the public interest. And I don't see a vision from the Republican side of the ticket, and I don't see a vision from the Democratic side of the ticket that actually contends with concerns that the public must live with. And it's just not good. It's not working. I don't see it. I'm not sure. I'm not down on America. I think there's an opportunity for change, but I don't know if this particular election is going to give us any change whatsoever.
I think it's a difficult situation. In some respects, we need some systemic change. We need, and it can't just be vague hope and change. It can't just be
right.
some vague promise for the future. It has to be concrete. It has to be real. The fact of the matter is, there needs to be more organization at the local level to be able to actually deal with some of these problems. There needs to be more fiscal responsibility to be able to afford to deal with these types of problems. But none of that is going to be solved in one election. But none of that's going to be solved in one election cycle. None of that is going to be solved by focusing on the presidential election, even though that's what's easiest to focus on. That's what's the headlines to focus on. And it is ultimately
important. Is America getting tired of these politicians that say absolutely nothing, but they go on for a half an hour saying one innocuous thing after the other? They don't deliver, and what they need to deliver on is only one thing. Where's the money? Anything else is a waste of time. Your promises are worthless, meaningless. We have elected officials that are supposed to deliver the bacon, and they're not delivering. And all we're doing is we're finding we're in greater and greater debt, and we have greater and greater need. And I don't know how this is supposed to balance out.
Well, I think the greater problem is, Hezzy, that they're not delivering the bacon, but they're not letting the American people deliver the bacon for themselves either. They're hindering, they're
absolutely,
quite literally and metaphorically hindering our ability to go to the grocery store.
Yeah, well, I'm not looking for mom and dad and government, but there certainly has to be a plan so that everybody can earn a living, and so that they can,
yeah,
you know, all this anxiety, all this angst is relieved. And it may take us 50 years to get there, but we need to get started somewhere. And I haven't seen us moving forward. I see us moving backwards. In over 20 years, I see us moving backwards.
It's a shame. But I don't want to take up too much of your time, Hezzy. And I hope that your next segment is much more positive than this one. This one,
well,
I was
is,
looking for.
After this segment, I've got to go to a special meeting, so I've truncated the show. I was only going to be on till 10:30 until you said you would come on, which I'm so thrilled that you did. And so when do you hit it in the road? Because I hear you're on your trip.
I'm on a very special trip. I'll be hitting the road on Saturday, so stay tuned
for
some more exciting news. Thank you so much, Hezzy.
All
oh, my
best.
Goodness.
Have a safe trip.
Have a safe weekend and try and stay positive.
Okay, I will, because I'll think of you. So
bye, Hezzy.
Did you ever see the movie Pollyanna?
No, I haven't.
Oh
my
God,
that's
old classic. That's why, and Pollyanna was blonde, so you're just like her, you know. So that, but she was really great.
Oh my goodness!
Your mother
that's
probably
something
will
that
know the movie.
I'm sure she will, but it's something to add to my to-do list this weekend.
Okay, be well. Have a great trip.
Thank
be
you,
well. Thank you so much. Bye. Here we have it, none other than Gabriella Metzl. She's the publisher and editor-in-chief of the Unvarnished blog. So hopefully you'll be able to get to listen to her. Well, yeah, let me just quickly check with regard to tomorrow, because I've got to head up to a meeting. I'm not going to be able to continue for today. So bear with me a moment. Let me just try to see. Okay. Let me see who's on for tomorrow. I need to recheck. In fact, I'm gonna be able to find out probably within the hour, see who our guests will be tomorrow. So I'll find out, and then we'll post that. But if we do, then we'll have one guest probably for an hour or so, and then we'll cover a lot of international news and an analysis after that. So we'll see you. We'll speak to you for whatever the case is all day Friday, from 10 to 12. So be well, folks, and thanks again for being with us today. And I'll go back to our studio screen and sign off. Until tomorrow. Goodbye.